Blog Talk Radio.
And again, I missed that mark. Morning, family. I'm about to bow out, but Thomas Berry is on with you all. Sister Rashi is on with you all, but I needed a couple of seconds real quick. Florida water reminds me of Korea. There's a scent, a smell to Florida water. It's odd, but if you know it, you know it. I'm down here because my niece graduated from school last night. I really do not have time. That's why I got to bow out. But I wanted to say what's up to everybody. I wanted to say you all have a great show. Brother Berry has a great product that he wants to let you all know about. We've teased it a couple of times, and we decided today would be the day that he was coming on and talk about it and get the world even more so involved in this movement that he has going on. Very proud of the brother. Been in his corner for a long time waiting for this to come to fruition. He has been laboring and pushing and pushing and pushing. And the fact now that it's all reality is a beautiful thing. So I just wanted to take a minute or two to say congratulations, brother. Thank you for sharing your vision with not only us but the world. And thank you and your team for the work that you put in to bring about this tool that will help, should go to helping a whole lot of people. All right? You all be good. You all be safe. I'm out.
All right, Brother
Lee.
That's the message. Yeah. Good morning, Brother Berry. How are you doing this morning?
I am doing good, Sister Rashi. How about yourself?
Well, I have been deep in research since me and you have talked last. Listen, you actually sent me down kind of a weird rabbit hole. Once you started, I mean, literally, you know how you have people who they know about a subject, but then there are those who are of the subject, right? And so,
right.
All this time, Brother Berry, let me start here. You're listening to Real Radio, radio established to address life. Here, this is Brother Berry, Brother Thomas Berry. I'm Rashi. I rarely give my last name. Honestly, I don't know much about neither one of those gentlemen, so I never give their names. But what we are discussing today is one of those subjects that people need to be writing notes down, because it's like we interact with the police. We figure out, we interact with the police state. We interact, but we're always the victim. Like, we almost are never empowered enough to interact with that power, with that entity above us, in an informed way, in a equitable way. And today, I think we're going to be able to share not just the 12 watch techniques, but just in general techniques that'll stop you from falling victim to, I mean, how do you explain it better? Just malfeasance, like police, people with authority, not doing what they were endowed to do with the authority we gave them. And so that's I'm so excited about this show, Brother Barry, not just because we're going to discuss an important matter, actionable, but I'm actually going to be listening and taking notes today, Brother Barry, so that when I'm talking to people who I know are going to be eventually interacting with the police, which is pretty much everybody, but it's some people who are a little bit, Brother Barry, look, more prone to interaction than others. That's the best way I can explain it. How can we empower these people so that they don't wind up dead? You know, not imprisoned long-term without hope of freedom. That's actually like the middle ground. The end stage that it could be, the worst case scenario, is death. So we're saving lives today, Brother Barry. And I think of another person I'd rather discuss this subject with. I've never found you uninformed. So how would you like to get started, Brother Barry?
Well, first I hear my brother Rodney Smith. Are you on, Rodney?
Good morning, Brother Barry. Good morning, Sister Rossi.
I didn't even know you were on there. That's a shame.
And on time.
Come through.
Even heard Brother Lee give his spiel. So, you know, this is an important show today about an important topic with an important tool to do, just like you said, Sister Raj, instead of always feeling like the helpless victim, to be able to start turning the tides on that and improve things literally for everybody.
All right, Brother Rodney. All right, so how, fellas, I'm kind of like your underground research lady, but I would like to be able to share pertinent information when it's important. So I'm going to somewhat shut up back here and allow you gentlemen to kind of set the stage for how we're going to address this matter.
Okay. All right. Well, first and foremost, what I wanted to do, because I know Brother Rodney, they had a situation out in Vegas. So I want to talk about 12 Watch, but more importantly, because I feel like this all intertwines. There's a lot of intersectionality in the mass shootings as well as the assault on black people by law enforcement when it does take place. And so, Brother Rodney, can you give us an update of what happened at the shooting at UNLV? Tell me, do you know some of the people that were there, and what was the death toll total?
So I believe as of now, the death toll is still three victims and, of course, the shooter. There's, I believe, one that's still in critical condition, and that's about all we have for now. The person who did the shooting was actually a semi-retired or retired educator from back east who sort of described himself as a genius. There's some more to the story that I'm starting to get from some people who were there. And yes, there were people there. We had the National Action Network had, I think, three people there. The president was on his way there. And one of the other members, I think the community outreach person, was also on his way there. When the incident happened, right before it happened, actually, the president's mother, Go Mom, called him and needed her son to run an errand. So he had to turn around and go take care of his mom. So he wasn't there when it actually happened, but the people, three of the other people who were there contacted him. He called the fifth person and had that person turn around. So yes, I did know at least three people who were there and who had to shelter in place.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry to hear that. My condolences to the people out there. Brother Rodney, just for them, the people that you know that experienced that, you know, how are, you know, mentally and emotionally, how are they holding up?
Well, right now, it's more of a shock thing, because even though we see it happen, even though it's happened here, as a matter of fact, the worst modern day mass shooting has happened here in our city, and actually not too far away from where the UNLV is located, just a few miles. It's still more of a state of shock right now. And they have grief counselors, and, you know, they're dealing with it. My experience on the military side of it is you go into a survival mode. Once you're through that, it's more of a shock that this really happened, and you're just trying to, you know, you kind of replay it, how it happened, why did it happen, you know. And then usually within a few days after that, it really starts to hit you as to what happened and what you were involved with. And that's when they're going to really need to be surrounded by their support systems, their friends, their loved ones, maybe even some of the others who experienced it, so they can have someone to share, talk out the experience with, because that tends to act as somewhat of a safety relief valve, so to speak, to get that out of their system. So right now they're still in the cycle of shock and acknowledging that this actually happened to them.
I bet you that happens more often than not. Like, you say to yourself, no, this is America, or no, I paid not to deal with this, or no, I just went to the grocery store. Not I don't deserve it as an individual, but hey, I wasn't in a nightclub at midnight. I wasn't, where the danger? I wasn't at a gas station at 1 o'clock in the morning. Why am I a part of this crime culture? And so how do you feel about the police response? Because sort of what we're talking about here is that interaction between people, the people committing crime, or just people who are thought to be committing a crime, and the people who are supposed to keep us safe, right? How do you feel as a Las Vegas resident about their response? Because this is technically y'all's second publicized mass shooting. Y'all had one when the guy went up there in the hotel room and shot up that concert, right, Mr. Rodney?
Right, that was at the Mandalay Bay. So, and yes, this is, as I said, this is our second large incident. The largest in the country in modern day actually happened at Mandalay Bay, which is only about 3 miles from the UNLV campus, roughly. And so we, even though we are a young city and not necessarily, you know, a very large city, the bulk of our population is in Clark County. And we have the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police. You know, it's called the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police, but it's a large police force. It is a very modern police force. It is a very active police force. Because we get so many tourists here, they have to keep, you know, they have to keep the moneymaker location safe. And so there, not to mention, we have military, a large military installation. And we have other governmental activities that happen here that have to be secured. So we have multiple agencies, and we have task force here. So when it comes to policing, there is no shortage of policing capability here, which has its pros as well as cons. As an example, there are some people who say we need to disband the police force. I am not one of them, because in situations like this, where is Uncle Pookie when you need him, right? So we need a police force, but we need a police force that is there to protect and defend people and property, and not a police force that we are afraid to see. And when this mass shooting happened, the police force that protects us showed up. They showed up big, and they showed up quickly, and they weren't the Uvalde police. You know, and again, this is a pro and a con. In this situation, it's a pro. They came up ready for action, and luckily the campus security showed up ready for action and took out the suspect after a short gunfight. But I can tell you, we say short gunfight because of the actual time, but when you're in a gunfight, it seems like forever.
That's right. When the bullets are willing, them whizzing bullets exponentialize that time. But not because I'm saying to myself, like, they have had to have some different tactical meetings about this new America, the volatile America that I'm not going to say it has January 6th on it, because in my opinion, this country has been kind of volatile. Well, I mean, maybe since 1619 or whatever, but more importantly, definitely since we started that anti-crack, anti-drug, the war, you know, the drug wars, the gang wars. When we started identifying facets of our community that we didn't want to exist, and we started hiring anti-czars, the anti-drug czar, the anti-gang czar, and allocating money, right, so that we can, and I'm putting it in my air quotations up, eradicate these things we don't want in society, right? So we give the money, we give the extra tax dollars, we shift the policy so that these individuals can do what they need to take these gangs, drugs. I mean, we've had several, right? Several wars on, blah, blah, blah. And when we get done, we have what? Like, we actually don't have that. We don't have a society without drugs. I can tell you that right now. We don't have a society with gangs the way we used to, but it's just because they don't advertise like they used to. They still affiliated. They just not standing outside the way they used to. So the things that we try to rein that money down, the people we hire to address these issues, they still exist. Like, they don't do the job. Either the job we're asking them to do is impossible, or they have yet been unable to do the job in a way in that we eradicate the thing that we said we didn't want. So, in your opinion, fellas, do you see a problem with us hiring people to address issues and then the issues still exist within the population?
Brother Barry?
Well, in my opinion, I think that it's the population that we got to start asking the question of. You know, the people that we hire to do public work are known as public servants, and they essentially work for the public. And what I worry about is that the lack of detail as well as the lack of training is only there because the public only thinks about law enforcement when it's in a panic. And we don't think about law enforcement when it's not a danger happening to us or visibly happening to others that we may see as a file. And we're not doing enough checks and balances to say, damn, don't they got cameras everywhere? We're always told that they got all these listening devices everywhere. How is it that stuff like this happens and no one knows? Or how come we're not responding to things proper? Because the thing I thought about when I heard about the Vegas shooting, I said, well, here's another example of people who are dead. We can't even have a conversation in the people's house in D.C. about stricter guidelines on people who are purchasing firearms, you know, even a limitation in some aspects on how fast people can purchase firearms, especially if they're not in a solid mental state. So I feel like, Rashi, I think while the police is problematic, I do think us as a people, and this is why I'm creating 12 Watch, I feel like the people have to take a little bit more of control put pressure on the politicians to demand that we get better training. And in some instances, make sure that these people, because we have a mental health issue in this country. It's a crisis. If we weren't talking about this in the after that, we'd be talking about the 26-year-old who tried to burn down MLK's childhood home in Atlanta, who had a mental health breakdown. And so it just shows up in different ways, sister. And I think we as a people, we have to figure out ways and then demand, not only just demand and enforce the demand to the politicians that we get things changed, not in an extreme way, but in a reasonable way, if that makes sense to you both.
So we yesterday at the gathering, we had a discussion, and I had only given 5 minutes for it, kind of like a lightning round, to give everybody a chance to kind of exhale on what happened at the UNLV campus. And the president of NAN happened to come right about that time. So it was a great opportunity to give him a chance to sort of let things out. And the very first thing that happened is people went to the two corners. We need more gun laws. And then on the other corner is my Second Amendment right. That's the two sides that people pretty much took with the associated nuances. And so I let them say those things because that's what we typically do. But then once they got saying that, I wound up extending it another 5 minutes and then subsequently did it another 5 minutes after that. Because what I told them is I said, it's time that we sort of get naked about this. I said, we need to start talking about this differently than how we've been talking about it, because how we have been talking about it has not led to any solution. And so if how we have been talking about it, which is the way we started talking about it, has not led to any solution, then maybe we need to talk about it differently. Maybe we even need to look at it differently. And I still say the same thing. And I think what Brother Barry has created sort of helps us start moving in that direction. And somebody even mentioned what Brother Barry said is, well, you know, we've been waiting for the politicians to do something that they have yet to do. But what about us as the everyday citizen? What can I do right now? Again, this takes us back to Brother Barry with 12 watts. Now, I'm not saying that 12 watts would have prevented this, but it does give us a level of control in some areas, and it gives us some visibility as well as data collection. And one of the things that we find, other than the basic data, that the average shooter is a young white male somewhere between, I think, 16 to 35 years of age. Other than that, there's not much data. What people immediately said was, well, we needed red flag laws. Well, a red flag law, as from the information that's coming out, would not have prevented this shooting. And then someone said, well, we need to have stricter gun control measures. We need to have better background checks. Well, again, so far, there's nothing that says that a background check would have caught this because he bought the weapon legally and he had the weapon for a while. So that probably would not have stopped this. And then someone says, well, we need to outlaw AR-15. Nobody needs AR-15 weapons. You know, and again, this is the usual stuff that we hear. And my understanding is this guy didn't use an AR-15. So that would not have prevented this from happening. And so, and I wanted to point it out. And then I also told him, I said, look, you guys are fixated on the AR-15. But I said, most shootings in this country do not happen with AR-15s or rifles or shotguns at all. As a matter of fact, to make those deaths statistically relevant, other than the fact that people have lost their lives, but it's when we're doing bean counting, only about 5% of gun deaths in this country happen with so-called long arms, and that includes hunting weapons, shotguns, and all other types of rifles. So I said 5%. The vast majority of the deaths happen by handguns, and we hear that that's what this shooter used. Well, if that's true, why are we looking at banning AR-15? And then somebody says, well, it's the large capacity that the ARs have. Once again, this wasn't an AR. Someone says, well, those bullets, they just do so much damage. Once again, it wasn't an AR. And I'm sort of going through this litany of things because this is the stuff that's normally said. None of it fits this particular case. And so can we move beyond just those things that we typically say and maybe look at what is behind it? My axiom is sick people create a sick society, and a sick society breeds sick people. What about society today that is breeding these people that are willing to commit these acts? What is it about society today that has police officers, when they're not in emergency incidents like this, you don't want to see them because you're afraid that you may be a victim of them? Those are the types of questions that I think that we should be more focused on, and then work backwards on trying to come up with workable solutions to solve them.
It's funny you should say that. I was like, you only really want to see the cops, call them. If you didn't call them, you don't want to see them. And that's a very strange, that's not how it's always been. I'm on the tail end of Officer Friendly. You don't remember Officer Friendly, Brother Barry?
Never met him.
Brother Rodney, they talked to Officer Friendly, am I correct?
So let me, real quick, when I was in kindergarten, I was in school in Brooklyn, in Bed-Stuy, and I was in kindergarten. And I'd only been going there for a little while, and one day my mother was late picking me up. And for some reason that I still don't know to this day, I decided to walk home. And immediately took a wrong turn. Luckily for me, that was the age where your crossing guards by schools were police officers, usually women. And it was a black woman. And they had the call box. I don't know if you all remember the call boxes that would be on the streets. They had the call box. So she saw me by myself, immediately knew I shouldn't be by myself, and asked me, you know, where my mother was and all of that stuff. She called the black and white. That was in the days when police cars in New York were black and white. She called the black and white, and two police officers were in the car. They came and picked me up, and they asked me, you know, what happened and all that. And they were very nice to me, and they asked me where did I live. And unfortunately, I did not actually know my street address, or I was panicked and couldn't remember. But I knew it was on Hancock Street, that it had a brown door, that I lived on the upstairs apartment, and that it wasn't too far from a school. Because at that time, my kindergarten and my public school were different. So they drove to Hancock Street, and I remember they had the shotgun in the car, because as a child, just, you know, that's something that stood out to me. And they rolled down Hancock Street looking for brown doors on the second floor, on the upstairs apartment. And when they got on my street, I knew it was my street. I told them which side of the street it was on. They drove slow. And when I got to my apartment building, I told them that's it. They said, are you sure? I said, yes. And they asked me if anybody was home. I said, my grandmother was home, because my grandmother from North Carolina had come up to stay with us for a little while. I went up the stairs, walked up the stoop, rang the doorbell. My grandmother was elderly and had some physical issues, so it took her a while to come down the stairs. The police officer still stayed there. They watched. When my grandmother opened the door, she saw me, kind of shocked, and then the officers said, "Is this your grandmother?" I said, "Yes." And they waved, I waved, my grandmother waved, and then we went upstairs to our apartment. I'm sharing that story with you because at one point in this country, and even today, but one point in this country for sure, that was your police officer, at least for children, regardless of color, in New York City. And somewhere between, now you're talking almost 60 years ago, but somewhere between then and now, things have taken a turn. And that's what I tell people we need to address. I also shared at the gathering yesterday that when I went to North Carolina to visit my grandmother, as I shared on this show previously, that especially this time of year, right around Christmas, because it's hunting season, that the parking lot was full of guns because most of the everybody, and especially the white students that drove, they had gun racks in the back window of their pickup with guns in them, loaded guns many times. And there was never a shooting. And then after Christmas, some of them might bring that new gun that they got, especially if it was their first one, to school for show and tell. There was never a school shooting. Well, now there are school shootings in urban environments. There are school shootings in rural environments. There are school shootings all over. Something has happened to our country and to the people in it since then that contributor to these shootings, and we are failing to delve into it to address what it might be.
You know, brother, I think what happened is a lot of the extreme conversation that was taking place, that has taken place on radio with some of the extreme right-wing radio has put people in a place psychologically to do things to folks is unhealthy. As much as we talk about music and music inciting kids to do things wrong, whether it's violently or sexually or drugs, I think the same way for talk radio. When we had that large window with Rush Limbaugh and others, and we still got that for the most part, it's not as talked about as much because it's kind of become like a normal place in society. But these conversations of extremism, either which way, from the left or the right, I believe sets us up for some of these violent outbursts when you're talking to people, almost provoking people who may be mentally unstable. The other thing that I want to say, and I like what you said about the police, I believe when you have police officers who belong to a community, and their idea is to protect and serve all other citizens inside of that community, I believe that you will find good to great policemen. I believe the breakdown is when it's just a job. Just like when we were talking about educators, I ran across, and Sister Rashi, you know this, the people that's in the building when it's just a job, they typically do the worst kind of job because it's just a job. They don't have no feelings about it. They don't feel impassioned about it. They don't want to help people. They're just there to go through the motions to get paid on that 1st and 15th. And it's even deadlier when it's law enforcement because those are the people that's more agitated, they're more irritated, and those are the ones that quickly to use force or violence or the ones that won't even show up on 911 calls when they hear people are in danger. And that, for me, is where I feel like policing has changed in this country. I believe when you have people who are more impassioned, now, let me caveat that by saying law enforcement, while we could talk about officer friendly, has not always been friendly towards African Americans as a whole throughout the nation. So we understand that.
Well, I mean,
that.
The inception,
but we also,
right, Brother Ben? The beginning of the idea of policing in this country, right? The inception is tainted with enslavement and white citizens' culture. It's tainted with this idea of control and oppression. So even the good cops we're fighting this almost like, you know, salmon swimming upstream, fighting this tide of ugly is the infrastructure, is the skeleton, the scaffold, if you will, for just one people somewhat controlling another. Now, they tried, because I've been looking at the fraternal, y'all sent me, I'm telling you, Brother Barry, you owe me one. You sent me down a very strange rabbit hole. So I went and delved into the Fraternal Order of Police, right? And their whatever they would allow you to see in the website without, you know, you have to enlist or you have to join it like a subscriber. So, but what they talk about is it almost looks like a Freemasonry, brotherhood, nationhood, it's social, like you said, to serve the people. The actual doctrine, if you read the standard operating procedure manual, as they say, it looks like the manual for building a great humanity, compassion at the site of tragedy, the ability to have life-saving capability, like the ability to stop harm and to save the greater good. All that's in the manual, right? So the issue might be an individual issue on how that's interpreted. Because if you actually, I mean, read the standard operating procedure for, you know, municipal policing within a population, they have typed that shit up good enough to make it look like a standard across the universe. But when you give Freddie Gray, Eric Gardner, come on, help me, Mike Brown. Come on, help me. Sonia.
We talking
Bland.
About, oh, yeah, Sandra Bland. Tamir Rice. George Floyd.
Ouch.
Fernando Castillo, Jamar Clark. Terrell Franklin. And these are just. Sterling Chop. Yeah, no. And you're right. And if you really look at it, and this is why we created the app, is that in most of these incidents, so let's take Tamir Rice for example. In that young man's tragic demise, the officer that shot him was already ruled unfit in another part of the state to not work. And he was hired in the city that he killed Tamir Rice in, even though the previous police chief said that he was unfit to be a law officer, and they hired him anyway. And they said he was unfit based off of his performance on the job, violations to other citizens. Derek Chauvin, we had a documentary premiere this week, y'all, that was crazy. It's called The Fall of Minneapolis, and it's talking about the death of George Floyd. But hear this. It is from a cop's perspective. It was done by a former news anchor here. I believe she was at CBS. It was either CBS or NBC, one or the other. And her husband was the former police chief of Minneapolis. Oh, no, I'm sorry, the former head of the police union in Minneapolis. But some said that there were even times, there were rumors that he had, and this is not rumors from the street, this is coming from inside of the precinct, that he was also a member of the Ku Klux Klan. And so she decided to do this documentary giving Derek Chauvin's standpoint and kind of blaming the people for what was taking place and not looking at what Derek Chauvin did. You know, they keep trying to point to the idea that George Floyd was on drugs. Well, even on drugs, he had no right to kneel on them. And Brother Rodney and Sister Rashi, the one white police officer, the young guy, he did call the ambulance for George Floyd. Do you know that he called the ambulance and it still took them 30 minutes to get there?
Wow.
And the hospital is a straight shot of one street from downtown Minneapolis to 38th in Chicago. where he died, as well as there's another hospital that is less than, I want to say, a mile away, where they could have came also and got this brother. Because you either get Hennepin County, which is downtown, and then right on the south side, right on Chicago, and I want to say 26, which is like 12 blocks away, it's Abbott Hospital. And they also could respond to the situation. So that is what we're dealing with when we talk about policing, and we're talking about even just the service to people. And let me say this bit, too, because I don't want to make it so much about law enforcement when I say these things, because you both can attest the American attitude towards each other has gotten worse. We are not as polite as we used to be to each other. We don't have grace and courtesy for each other. Everything is about expediency, and we show up to work with that. And if we show up to work with that at the schools, at the restaurants that we serve, at the shops that we work at, in the business offices, and we're like that, imagine how that is when you give somebody a badge and a gun and then have the system backing them. And the everyday attitude of the citizens is already bad. Imagine giving that power to someone else in that climate. And now you can start to see and understand why we have so much of the extremes that we do, because we live in an extreme society where we're not checking that type of attitude, hence President 45.
Not only are we not checking it, we having rallies to stoke the fire. We giving, you know, pardons to people who we know. We putting people in positions of power who we know are going to defund this and overfund that and ignore, you know, legislation about things that are vital to our overall nationhood. So, yeah. Okay. Now, this is what I want to ask you about. So we have these instances, right, Brother Barry and Clea, about the database in this question. Mm-hmm. You proposing that people, say me, I have seen an egregious act by a cop, okay? Mm-hmm. I have subscribed to the app 12 Watch, right? And say I'm watching it. I'm seeing a cop do something wrong, right? To what capacity can I report to 12 Watch? Do I download a video onto your database? Is there some kind of like pictures I'm supposed to take and attach to a text? Do I say, hey, here's the car, here's a picture of the cop doing this? At what capacity is 12 Watch prepared for me and just a regular old fifth grade education, barely can, you know, twerk, you know, no. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. And I'm just telling you the truth of what I'm seeing in the classroom, what I'll ultimately be interfacing is not a collegiate, super collegiate person, just some regular, you know, I did my best in high school. I can work my phone, I know. I might be able to report it back like a police incident, like we do each other about them, though, this time. How would I interface with 12 Watch after I saw the cop, you know, do the thing that I'm definitely want to make sure they all know he's on that? How do I do it?
So I would say the first thing is, you know, you don't want to wait. You can record any interaction with law enforcement with you or anyone else right away. And that would be the best way to help build the database, because with the facial recognition software that we have, we would be able to keep track of all of those stops, sort of like Waze, the traffic app. We would want people to record those interactions and others, whether it's with yourself or others. And all you have to do is point and click. The way we set the app up, you don't have to use your government name as far as your username. Do we have access to your government name? Yes. But unlike Facebook and sort of like Instagram, we want to make sure that you have a little bit of privacy. So if law enforcement does purchase the app, right, because anybody can buy the app, we don't want people's livelihood being in danger, if that makes sense to you. That's why your GPS location is only designed for you to connect it with your loved ones. So if you're in danger, they know. We'll know in the app, but we don't want the general public to know where your GPS location is, unless you're in a situation where you have to hit that panic button. And then that way, anyone in the 5-mile radius would be able to get to you if you feel like someone or the police is doing, doing you like a Sandra Bland, where she was in Texas from Illinois and she didn't have any loved ones or relatives, right? We want you to use it in all interactions with law enforcement, because here's the thing, to use a football analogy, it's like giving the ball to Tyreek Hill. It may seem like a five-yard pass, but it has the capability to go all the way to the house. And what I mean by that, it can be as simple as a parking ticket that can end up becoming something as much as a deadly encounter. So you never know. And we have to get out of the idea of dealing with law enforcement, because we're not saying it's all cops, but until you are fully aware of where that person's mind is at that day and you're able to walk away from that interaction, you don't know whether it's going to be a good interaction or bad interaction, because the reality of it is they have the power to detain you. You don't have the power to detain them.
Right. Right. They took the oath, right? I mean, we took the please don't, I won't hurt you. Some of us do. But they actually read the manual, decided that they were capable of it, and that their individual biases would be very, very little of what they're doing with their career, like most of us. You may not like a certain population of people as a doctor, but you are obligated with your oath to not kill them or do no harm if you can not do any harm. So this is the matter. People say, why are you messing with these people? Because they said, we asked something very important. Can you be among us? Of us. And that's another thing we need to hear. You're not trying to create a us-them reality. Are you, Brother Barry, with this app? You want us to report when they save a kitten from the trash can too, right?
No. I don't want us to do that. This is what I want us to do. I want us to be able to say, instead of saying the police, and I talked to Brother Rodney, he can vouch for me, I've said this plenty of times in private. The goal is, out of saying the police, if it's Officer Ryan, let's talk about Officer Ryan. If Officer Ryan is that bad apple on the force, then Officer Ryan should be the person that we focus on, and he should be the subject of our conversation. That's the part that I feel like is always missing in the dialogue. It's always us talking about other, like the officers or the police did this versus, no, Officer Ryan did this. Because if we can't pinpoint it and we can't say what's really going on, then in reality, we are going to be constantly spinning our wheels. And here's the thing that I found out by putting this together. You know, good police officers, they are scared of the bad police officers. And it's hard for them to do their job and report them. That's why if you noticed in the Derek Chauvin situation with George Floyd, those other cops waited. Think about the two out of the three that was standing there. They were pretty young, didn't have a track record of abusing anyone. They were working with senior officers. But they were scared to step up. And I hate the fact that they are in prison. And I mean this wholeheartedly, because I know that they were fearful for their lives. And when you're scared, how could you be a cop with a badge and a gun and scared. They weren't scared of George Floyd. They wasn't scared of the people in the community. They were scared of those officers that were there, Officer Zane, Officer Chauvin, who've had a history of violence in the police force, a history of violence. And, by the way, with their history of violence and their exuding violations, they were still training younger officers. Now, Sister Rashi, we put two and two together. If Derek Chauvin has a history of abusing citizens, why would anyone put a young person with him to learn on the beat how to do their job? What are we teaching that young person to be?
Yeah, because we're trying to be
and
tough.
So,
like you say, like the politicians say, we are what on crime? We are tough on crime. We are intolerant of crime. We are going every election year, right? Every election year.
Yes.
At least one of the candidates, at least one. And this is the interesting thing I found when I did the research. They go back and forth on who. Sometimes it's both sides saying tough on crime. But for the majority of the time, it is the GOP, the Republican Party, who is willing to fund at any cost a regime that is tough on crime, be it the creation of a whole new, you know, department, be it some, you know, non-national or international espionage that helps or hinders the ability for some crime-related stuff to happen in the nation. There is so much about anti-crime. So why would we not be training and funding foot soldiers on the ground to stop this wave of crime that we already got through saying it exists there?
Mm-hmm.
So if they're really tough, like Officer Ryan, Officer Chauvin,
mm-hmm.
Officer Zane,
mm-hmm.
if they're willing to step on somebody's neck, if that's what it's going to call for in order to keep crime, if they decide it's my crime to do, then
mm-hmm.
how do we stop that pressure from this top of tough on crime, resistance from the bottom of, hey, man, y'all, if y'all don't stop, I'm going to shoot this place up, and then this pressure
mm-hmm.
cooker in the middle of the people who signed the oath. And now we but the oath is so important because of the pressure that it's got to be done very, very well. It's got to be done with some finesse. It's got to be done with some training. And apparently they think the longer you have been doing it, it constitutes you to be able to do train somebody else to do it. I don't know. Give me a percent. 75%, you know. As well as
so
you
in
are.
So in Minneapolis, they had over 140 ranking officers who had violated citizens' rights from anywhere from throwing an explosive device into a person's car to shooting unarmed people to planting drugs on people. They had them training the cadets coming onto the force. Now, I say that to say if you got 140 repeat offenders, violent repeat offenders, right, like criminal repeat offenders training your young force, then you are only beginning that. Now, when we do record, this is one thing that Brother Rodney asked me to speak on, and I want other people out there to understand. This is not a pro-police or anti-police app. This is an app that is pro due process for all citizens, and if we get encounters with good police officers who make good stops, sometimes people speed and they do get traffic tickets. They you know, you break the law, you got to get your traffic ticket. If an officer is doing the right thing and we're recording that, that also shows us as a community how policing is supposed to be done the right way. There's a right way to do policing, and once again, I know the rest in peace to a young man whose mother had a mutual friend of ours reach out to me yesterday because he was murdered by St. Paul police, I want to say Thursday night, Friday morning. But the situation was that he pulled a gun out on his girlfriend and she called 911. and he had a shootout with the police, and he died. And while I'm definitely offering condolences to that young man's family, the other side of it is that he pulled a gun out on that young lady, and the law and the police did what they did what they were supposed to do. If somebody's shooting at you, I don't think that law enforcement should not protect their life. I think we all should be protecting our life. The other side of it, though, too, is what happens when someone is not shooting, right? And when we don't have video, and all of this is speculation from the police and this young lady. Now, there could have been somebody who had 12 watts if they were there to record it all, and we might find out that that's a totally different story, right? But that's why we need the video, because if we aren't, as citizens, taking control of that ourselves, then that's on us. And I keep saying this about us as a community. We have to start taking more control into our own hands. The things we can't control, we should work to control them. Things that we can control, we must control them. This app gives us control. This app gives us the access to attorneys so that if you do get a ticket bogusly or a cop is harassing someone else on the street and it's recorded and it's uploaded and it's shared, that if that person has the app or their relatives or someone that knows them have the app, they can at least say, hey, you got video on 12 watch. We've seen what this officer did. Did you know this officer has a history of doing this? Thanks to my research team that's finding all of these court documents, putting into the system so we can keep these profiles going. And now, by the way, since we got the, we know this officer's background, we got the video, we got a lawyer, let's say in Vegas, that can help you go to court and get your, and fight for your due process, get those charges dismissed, and then file a civil complaint and charges against this cop. Let's strip this cop of his badge. Oh, and let's go another step further. Not only do we strip him of his badge in Vegas, but anywhere that he goes in this country, thanks to this app, he can't get a job. Because if he goes to Memphis and tries, well, the people in Memphis will be able to see, thanks to the app, we'll alert them to let them know who's coming to town. Or if we don't get it, if somehow he falls through the cracks, thanks to facial recognition from the app, he is going to and will be notified, and then he'll also be a part of those GPS teams. So whatever precinct he works in, when people drop to that precinct, bam, his face is going to be there. Everything that he did in Vegas all the way to Memphis is going to show up on the screen. People will know exactly who he is, his threat level, and how to deal with his officer. But that's the things that we as citizens can control. And that's on us to do it. And, you know, I hear people all the time, you know, I have people ask me, hey, can you send me the link? I want to do the early subscription. And they don't, and I don't get upset. All I say to us consistently, we're only going to get the things that we fight for. If we don't work for it, if we don't stand up for it, then we're going to keep on being upset, as I was when I was at the dinner table and saw the video of Philando Castile taking his last breath. Being upset about George Floyd, seeing him being kneeled on that Memorial Day weekend. Sandra Bland haunts me to this day. I never met that sister, but her face is forever ingrained in my mind because she didn't deserve to happen. What happened to her, she didn't deserve that. But what I hear people talk about these people, it's almost like they're talking about a character from The Wire. And people are sad about it. But when it comes to doing something about it, we don't have that urge. And what I would tell anybody that's out there listening, this is the time to do something about it when there's nothing happening. In 2024, there have been 1,111 people murdered by law enforcement. I'm going to say that again. In 2024, there's been 1,111 people murdered by law enforcement.
Wait, you said 23, right? Wait, you meant 23.
In 23. Thank you. I appreciate it. 2023. And you can go look at the Washington Post has a counter, and they count all of the people that have been murdered by law enforcement. Since 2015, there have been 9,129 fatal police shootings around the country. When folks say, well, what about black-on-black crime? The one thing I would tell you about the criminal in the streets compared to law enforcement is trained to de-escalate. People in the streets are not. Law enforcement is held to a higher standard. people in the streets are not. When officers get murdered in the line of duty, they get pensions, their family, or their family gets their pension, the benefits, and all those other things that's paid out, the funeral, and all of that. When someone is murdered in the streets, they get nothing. Family has to do GoFundMe and all of these things.
They get a fish fry, a GoFundMe, some T-shirts
with their face on it, and some shooting,
and some people actually shoot up in the sky and shoot up I understand. So it's about action, applicable. What can you actually do? Not conversation. Like what can be done? And this app is showing something that can be done. It's called accountability. Holding people who have taken an oath accountable. And I'm trying to figure out, like, what's the equivalent like in another industry. I guess it would be like quality control. It's like quality control, for one. But I'm trying to think, who else would have I'm sure the medical board does something related to this for doctors. You know what I'm saying? Like if you get too many complaints or too many people saying, hey, doctor, touch me up. My what's-a-call-it was wet when I left. Oh, touch me up, right? He get like three of them, and then the medical board come in, right? As a teacher, we know they constantly trying to come in on us. They walk in on our classroom, once a week, if not twice a week, right? Trying to make sure that we ain't choking the shit. I mean, accidentally harming those blessed children of God. And so every industry probably has such a thing, except the cops, right? We call it the internal affairs. Speaking of that, what would your relationship be, per se, internal affairs division of the police? Because they are essentially the people who are socially charged with policing the police. I mean, or do I have it wrong?
No, you're right. But the problem with internal affairs is that internal affairs are depending on other officers as well as testimony from other citizens. And are people courageous enough to talk? That blue wall, here's what's funny. We talk about snitching and the idea of no snitching in our community, and we talk about how bad it is. You know where the number one place where no snitching is enforced is in the police department. You're a rat if you tell on your partner. You're a rat if you tell on one of your colleagues, and they treat you like they would treat someone else in the street, setting you up to go in on calls and you may get your brains blown out, shooting you accidentally behind when your back is turned, saying they thought you was a perp. That you putting your life in danger, and this is why many of the officers don't speak to an internal affairs, so they don't get a good investigation. What this app does is it does create almost like a citizen review of officers around the country. This gives citizens, I don't know if you guys have this in Kansas or in Las Vegas, but have you ever seen the busted website pages where they show people's mugshots and what they've done?
Yes, we have it as a newspaper. Do you guys have it, Rodney?
Sure do.
So 12 Watch not only gives you the officer's face and the badge, we also let you know of the previous things that they've done and also how much they've cost the city. So it's similar to Busted. It's the citizen's answer to police officers. And once again, all cops may not be in the database. I want to say this again. All cops may not start off in our database. They may grow in time thanks to the AI and the facial recognition software that will calculate and put them into the system and how many arrests have they made. We'll be able to track that data with them as we grow the app in live time. But those officers who initially are in the system, those are the head busters. Those are the ones that are like Derek Chauvin. Those are the ones who are like Kim Potter. Those are the ones that, like those cops who were in Memphis who killed that brother, Tyree. Those are the people that we're putting in the system first and foremost, because what we're saying, Sister Rashi, is that we understand through research that if they have a history of being violent, even though it may not cause death in the initial crimes against the citizens, sooner or later, as they keep that badge, probably end up killing someone or maiming or hurting them in a bad way.
So we're going to gather this information, right? I want to project 12 watts in my mind, if you will allow me.
Go ahead.
5 years into the future. 5 years. Okay, that's how they talk on Shark Tank. Ain't that right, Brother Rodney?
Yep.
What's your five-year plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is, in 5 years, what are we going to do? What kind of power will the data that 12 Watts has gathered be able to do? Are we going to be able to, do such a thing like a busted paper are we going to have is there going to be an online paper? What will we do with this data other than show a pattern of behavior for some bad apples?
So here's a couple of things that I'm hoping that we'll be able to do in 5 years. A, I want to increase the civil payouts that's happening to citizens around the country. African Americans, just like in the criminal courts, don't fare well in the civil courts. We've had incidents in the Twin Cities where brother was shot 9 times and got paid $999, even though he was the wrong person that they were looking for. We've had incidents where families were beaten, the homes raided at 3 o'clock in the morning. They knock out the mother and father and beat the children, and the family collectively, a family of five, got $5,000. That's egregious. And we believe that if the penalties were higher financially, that would force some change. The other thing that we want to do is make an impact on what we call the control boards. We want the control boards to stop giving renewing licenses of officers who have violated citizens' rights and put that pressure to be that in 50 states around the country. We want to help support grassroots organizations like the National Action Network, and those are legacies, NAACP, and, we got the Unity Community Mediation Team here that we partner with, and we're reaching out to organizations like Soul in Chicago. We want to partner with those organizations, and with that partnership, we want to say, listen, we don't want to just protest. Let's get out and change some of these laws. What do y'all feel like is, because the citizens in each city should determine the laws they want. Do they want the officers to stay in their community? Like we were talking when I was in Vegas, and they were talking about a couple of elected officials that did not live in the city. Well, there should be things that change. Brother Rodney said, well, how are we going to highlight the good cops? Well, we're going to highlight the good cops by the good showings, and when there are great interactions, we control it, right? And let me say this. 12 Watch will be akin to what you see when you go on Facebook. It's not only just an app, it's a platform. So you'll be able to see what a good arrest is like. We'll be able to see from good officers. We'll also have the podcast and things of that nature. We're going to bring cops on to talk to them, because this is not a talking at moment. This is a talking with. And that's the only way that we can change things. Yes, should we be angry when they're out of pocket? Hell yeah, we should be out of angry. But if you think if my 93-year-old grandmother has someone breaking into her home, you don't think that I wouldn't want her to call 911? And when the police show up, you don't think I wouldn't want them to show up using the force necessary to protect my 93-year-old grandmother? We all feel that way. So it's all about having common sense conversations with reality expectations on both parts, because it is a relationship. And it's a part of the fabric of the country. Policing is a part of the fabric. So if it's going to be here, then it's on us as citizens to make sure that we get the best policing possible. And that means stand down on this police state. Don't over-police the people. We don't need head busting. That's what I heard that the current police chief has said, that he wants to return in the streets of Minneapolis. He wants head busting. So that's why he would hire Officer Timberlake from West Virginia, who also tased and beat an African-American man who was having a mental health crisis 2 weeks after the death of George Floyd. It was on video. But when he got fired from the police department in West Virginia, Minneapolis all too happily hired him. And that shows you the culture of the police department there in Minneapolis. Does that make sense, Mr. Rashi?
Indeed it does. Like, why are you fishing? Because is there somebody who gets to hire policemen? If you don't have enough people within a society, right, who want to agree to take the oath, then you start shopping outside of the, you try to fish in people like they do teachers, right? Hey, are you a teacher who started teaching in New York? Come for a slower pace here in Kansas City. We'll pay you $5,000, like that, right? They got them saying the Fraternal Order of Police had advertisements that have them same campaigns. Hey, are you looking to travel to a less, unfortunately, it almost looks like, are you tired of killing people in New York and would like to chill and kill people in Florida? We have a transfer for you. But anyway, that was me being mean. Anyway, those ways that they are able to shift bad behavior within a department, say once a bad cop has trained his trainee, but the trainee has gotten in trouble, or the bad cop is ready to move. He's already moved on. He's ready to move on. They get a whole new city to repeat the cycle all over again. So this has to be more than a citywide thing. This has to be national and ultimately international, so that we can see, for one, accurately track the movement of police behavior that is not doing the public what it's supposed to do. And so if we can track that, if we can see Officer Ryan go from Ferguson, Missouri, down to New Orleans, down to Houston, you know, up to, you know, see him and then see the rate of people coming, calling me and talking about, hey, there's this cop that just pulled me over. His badge number is blah, 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 blah. You get to see that his badge number is this here, the same dude, though, the same behavior. If we could track it that way, the way 12 Watch is going to be able to do, it may, in fact, like, this is revolutionary. Because there is no other real database other than the ones that the cops have, where we can track bad human policing behavior in a way that we can say, oh, he's here now. That's right, Brother Barry. He came up from New Orleans. He got three cases on him. We got him. You know, now he's here. He agreed for a 70, you know, some percent pay cut to do this job, but now we're going to have to deal with the behavior. Watch out for Officer Ryan. Boom, that's on the website. Right. And everybody who deal with him, who's a 12 Watch app user and subscriber, or they're adjacent to it where their family has subscribed and now they get to have the benefit of it. We get to see Officer Ryan in action and know his deal and say, oh, okay, you that one cop here. The one people who are successful for you, they hold their hand out like this. It ain't no reason for you to do it. Everybody know, here's the camera, Officer Ryan. We just compiling data against you so we can make sure we follow you wherever you go with the way you police us. Oh, that'll kill all Officer Ryan's behavior. And he will not be able to keep getting hired, Brother Barry, with a database like that.
Right. And this will be one of the few things that this is data that we control as a people. Now, Brother Rodney is asking, what about showcasing good cops? So, Brother, I want to say a couple of things. The initial database that's built out, we're only building it out based off of the GPS thing. That's why we always say it's a GPS calculator, because when you go into those precincts, Sister Rashi, when you go back to Vegas and visit Brother Rodney, when you go from precinct to precinct, Because you're traveling, you don't know your way around Vegas. You don't know these folks, right? You are able to get those pings letting you know that Officer Ryan is there, and it could be Officer Kelly as well. You get to know about Officer Ryan and Kelly because they're in the database. Now, if Sister Rashi is pulled over by Officer Jones, Officer Jones is a good officer. Might as well, you know, she talks kind. She knows the law. She just wants to make sure that Sister Rashi understands that she was going 45 in the 35 zone, and that was it. And Sister Rashi has the app on, and the facial recognition registered that Officer Jones is in the system. Now she's in our system permanently. And now we get to, not only do other people get to see that interaction with Officer Jones throughout 12 Watch, it's also saved on Sister Rashi's page because she'll be able to store her videos for up to 6 months at a time, right? Now that's stored, people get to see that. If Sister Rashi wants to start a post about her interaction with Officer Jones and talk to other people on 12 Watch, they can have an entire conversation. Sort of like what you do on Facebook. They can have conversations in groups and what have you and talk about how polite Officer Jones is. And then if we see enough of that from Officer Jones, you're damn right. One of the things that I'm doing with my business is I'm going to lift Officer Jones up. I'm also going to uplift those people who are subscribing to the app. These are some of the customary ways that America used to run. We have to get back to the better part of the country. Was not always perfect, and y'all know this, and I say this all the time. It has never been a perfect experiment in this country for us. But the things that are right, we have to get to it. So we got an Officer Jones, you know, and that sister is a great officer. She's just doing her thing. We want to acknowledge her, and then we want to also bring Officer Jones in when we have issues with police departments inside of Vegas. We know that Officer Jones is a trusted friend. Hopefully, Officer Jones has the okay and courage to come and sit with the community to say, hey, when you are stopped, here's the proper way that I should interact with you, but here's the way that you can interact to make sure everything goes right. If I ask you for your license and registration, hey, once you hand it to me, this is what I'm doing, right? These are the things that you need to check for. Don't do this because if you do this, then I'm going to feel this way, right? So Officer Jones and other officers like her around the country could help bridge some of those differences. Now, I want to say this because it was a beautiful sister in Chicago who was an officer who was gunned down a couple of months ago. And she was also sort of like this Officer Jones that I was talking about. She made it out of the community. She became a cop, but she was also very helpful in the community. The community mourned that sister. So when you do it the right way, even though she met an untimely demise, she still had respect from her peers as well as the people that she served because she did it to the best of her ability. And that's her legacy, even if it's a short one. She was known as a great officer. And that's what we want officers to aspire to be, but that's also what we want to demand from them. You shouldn't get awards for writing, or you shouldn't get promotions for writing frivolous tickets. I don't care if the politician that's in your state is running for president and they're saying they're tough on crime. That doesn't mean that you start more profiling to kind of fit what's going on in that echo chamber. We want officers who are going to say, nope, we got some integrity. And I'll say this last bit, and Brother Rodney and Sister Rashi, I want y'all to ask me more questions. That I feel like our problem is that we say things are the way that they are as if we have no power to change them. No, this app is giving the power back to the people. And it's not just for black folks. It ain't just for brown folks. It's for all people. We want all people to sign up to be a part of 12 Watch, whether you live in the city, you live in the suburbs, what have you. Because those people in the suburbs, they're having their issues too. The young kids in high school are having their issues too. So it's not an age problem, it's not a race problem, and in some instances I'm hearing there's not even a class issue. Everyone is having their issues with law enforcement because of the attitude of some of the people who are carrying a gun in a badge.
Well,
Brother Barry, I wanted you to go back to why it's important to know about the payout. So, for example, in Las Vegas, we know that there is a standard payout for black people, and it is a fraction of the cost for the same infraction had it been a white person. But this data is a little difficult to come by. We also
yes.
know that sometimes in Las Vegas, it can be difficult to find lawyers. But I just want to, here in Las Vegas, we have what's called the Police Liability Fund. And it is a mm-hmm. joint fund between the city and county that pays into it so that when there is a police incident, there is money to pay for it. So, for example, maybe a police officer is on a high-speed chase and he has to do a pit maneuver and he wrecks his police car. That has to be fixed. But
mm-hmm.
suppose that police officer busts a cap in somebody unlawfully and the family of the individual sues. Well, the police officer doesn't pay for that. That comes out of the police liability fund. The police liability fund for Las Vegas was $40 million annually. We're a small city, but it was $40 million annually. And I've often said, if we knew how much our tax dollars were being used to pay for police to kill, brutalize, and victimize us, maybe enough people would put pressure on the mayor and on the city council and on the police department itself so that these so things can be put in place to mitigate these instances. 1 year, our police liability mm-hmm. fund was emptied like halfway of the year, and the sheriff had to come to the city council and the county commission to ask for emergency replenishment. And that was the year they killed a few black people because, you know, they were getting sued.
Mm.
New York's police liability fund, I haven't checked recently, but I think it used to be $400 million. And I was wondering, and it might go by different names, but I think your app tracks payouts. And I wanted you to explain a little bit more about what the app, how it tracks it, can be done with that information.
So the one thing I would say is that that information is important because it also tells you about the policies that are happening behind the scenes with the police department. They're keeping track. They look at data and statistics like any other organization, right? So when you see when it's that way, Brother Rodney, where they've killed so many, the other thing that we have to ask, and this is just what I like to say is it's cost of doing business, right? Or what do they call it? The debt to income ratio. So if I pay Officer X, let's say $90,000, but he's costing me $8 million, how long, you know, how could he make up that $8 million to the city of Las Vegas? And why does he still have a badge? Why does he still have a gun? As a matter of fact, why is it that he's able to cost that? Then we got another officer who's getting the same amount, and then he's costing another $20 million. Then I have to look at the police chief, right? And I have to look at the mayor and ask the mayor, depending on what type of system you have. Do you have a strong mayor system? Because it could be a city council as well if you have a weak mayoral system. We'll get into that another time. But we have to ask, what are the policies that are in place that are protecting the citizens? Because somewhere in there, someone's given the okay. And they're given that by the hiring of those officers, but it also breaks the city. It puts a strain on the city. But I will say this, Brother Rodney. Those payouts should be also important to the citizens because it comes out of your pocket. The officer is still going to get paid his $90,000 salary, even when he goes on desk duty for a shooting. Fatal or non-fatal, he's still getting paid. And you have to pay for his crime. Even though they may say it's not a crime, they might say, oh, well, it was a reasonable shoot because he said he was scared. Well, if he's scared, do we really want a scared officer on the force wielding a gun, shooting unarmed people, choking people who he could simply put in handcuffs? And if that's the way that the police chief sees it and the mayor backs the police chief, then what we need to say as citizens, you are costing us too much, and then we have to mobilize to remove you from office because it starts from the top down. That's my belief on why that's important, to know what the payouts are, because it costs the city, and it's an attitude that's pervasive. It's pervasive. If the mayor doesn't want that to happen and he's putting pressure on the chief is going to put pressure on his guys not to do it. And if it does happen, somebody's getting fired.
So I'm glad that you pointed that out, because one of the things about this app that I like, and the app is called 12 Watch for those out there in the listening audience, is the thing. One of the things I like about this tracking the payout is, as you articulated, but those are our tax dollars. And we're already paying the police officers the salary. So, and we're paying them to do a job. Well, one way that we can get an idea of how good the management and supervision, the leadership of a police force is by the payout. So, for example, it don't always have to be shooting somebody. If they're wrecking their car because they're just wrecking their cars, the citizens' tax dollars have to pay for that, right? Now, if they wrecked their car because they did a pit maneuver, then that is a authorized and acceptable expense. But if they're just reckless, you know, driving, it's not acceptable. If they're causing property damage to other vehicles or to someone's home or whatever, those are unacceptable. And that, what I like about the app is that instead of us always looking for someone else to do something for us, provide for us, it puts the power in the citizen's hand. It puts the power in our hand. It gives us an opportunity to control the situation. It gives us an opportunity to be impactful and not always reactionary, to be proactive. So, for example, in this app, if somebody just caused their city to pay out $3 million because of they pulled up on a child in a playground with a with a toy pistol, a water gun, and they go and literally just drive up and shoot that child without verifying what is actually going on, like what happened with Tamir Rice. Then when that police officer goes to get hired in Las Vegas, because that happened in Ohio, they go to get hired in Las Vegas. Well, maybe that gives the citizens an opportunity to pressure the sheriff. We don't want you hiring that person to police us in our city. Or we don't want, as taxpayers, this person is, he's had two payouts for abuse. We don't want this police officer in our city. So that's power that we could have that we currently do not have. And I really wanted you to hit that home on why it's important to monitor these payouts. They call it a police liability fund in Las Vegas. It may go by another name where you are. And I've been saying for years that we need to monitor this. One thing could be if a police officer is costing us taxpayers money because he's abusing taxpayers, but then police officer gets promoted to sergeant, well, maybe that's a problem with leadership. And it's not just the police officer, but maybe we need to address the situation at that particular precinct or station on why are you promoting someone that's costing taxpayers money because they're harming the same people that they're being paid a salary to protect. So that, Brother Barry, if there was nothing else in the app but that, that would make it worth the annual subscription price for me. But there's so much more to this app. So if you can share with everyone again the name of the app, when it's going live, and some more of the features of the app and what it's supposed to do.
So the name of the app is 12 Watch, and that's TWELVEWATCH APP. And the reason why we had to do it that way is because there's a watch company that's actually called 12 Watch too, by the way. and they're the numeric 12. But the app it will be going live, we're hoping, Juneteenth of 2024. And the reason why we wanted to do it on Juneteenth is because it's symbolic of a lot of things. And I know it's just symbolism, but we can create the reality of what we want to, right? I know people debate that, but hey, it's on us. We create, we write our own history. We write our own story. And we feel like this is such a big issue in our community during the summer, especially the summer of election year. This is a presidential election coming up. As Sister Rashi talked about earlier, this is when the folks are out saying we want to be tougher on crime. We want, you know, and then we start feeling the impact. That's when the profiling and things started to go up. So we felt like, hey, before it gets too deep in the summer, let's have something that we can equip people for. We're striving to get at least 1 million people to have at least a one-month membership by the 15th or by that Juneteenth, because it's important to us across the nation to begin to deal with this data and create this data. My team will come to most of the cities in the country. We'll be there for 2 to 3 days starting out, and then once we get things in the database, we start building our database out, we'll be in places for 1 to 2 weeks at a time so that we can make sure that we are getting ingratiated with the citizens, because this is all about the people. The people in Vegas will make this go. The people inside of Minneapolis will make this go. If we think we can sit and wait on law enforcement to do something to handle this, they won't. If they wanted to do it, they would have been done it. Some of the great features that I love about the app is the first one is the idea of the GPS populated, because I feel like as travelers, you don't know where you're getting into. But this app gives you an opportunity to know precinct to precinct. This is what you're getting into. These are the officers that are there. Here's their photo. Here's their badge number. Here's the squad car. And here's the things that they've done. So now you got the access to be on the lookout for them. You may not. I would always advise not to look while you're driving. But if you're on the bus or you're on the shuttle or what have you when you're traveling, you can certainly look. The other feature is the ability to go live with a GPS locator, so that your family and friends, if you're in your community, they can know where you're at, and if things are getting out of hand, even if you're having a mental breakdown because of anxiety, they are able to see that, get where you're at, and get you some help. We also have access to therapists. I want to say that again, therapists, because police interaction for us is very traumatic, Brother Rodney and Sister Rashi, very traumatic. So you got access to therapists if you have some type of anxiety or trauma for dealing with an officer right afterwards. You have access to a lawyer, as Brother Rodney said. Our people don't have access to lawyers. Now we got access to lawyers, and lawyers can actually see what happened if you use this app, and they'll be able to say, hey, you got a case. We want to represent you with this case. Let's talk. And by the way, the first thing I talked about with the GPS thing, now that lawyer knows that officer's background. So they can see what that officer's done in the past and what he's doing to you. And, hey, now the lawyer can lawyer, and then that gives you a better chance in civil and criminal court. You start off with a consultation, and if you say, hey, this is the route I want to go, bam, now you got a lawyer in your town. We want to connect you to lawyers and therapists in your town. That's very important to say. The next thing that we have, we also have what we call the chat feature. You can talk while these things are going on, these videos are going on, and you can create groups and conversations and organize with the app. We want people to be able to organize. You can come in as a community partner and already set up the idea, organize with citizens who have the app. They can do that on their own. Me and Brother Rodney, we were in a Facebook group called The Rant, right? So Brother Rodney, they can recreate The Rant in Vegas all around policing through 12 Watch. Did you know that, brother? So that's
another thing. I know it now.
So now they also have the access, if you're a community partner, like I'm hoping National Action Network will be in all 99 cities around the country, then you'll be able to have access to do fundraisers for families who may have suffered because of police violence, for funerals or for bail and for those types of things, lawyer fees. We can raise that right there on the app. Why go to GoFundMe and give these folks money? What we do with all the proceedings that go to this app, a lot of this money is going right back to the community. That's not a feature, but that is the promise that we're giving you from the app. The panic button, which I told Brother Rodney when I saw what happened in Vegas. I said, brother, the panic button would have helped them people in NAM, because if the police officers wouldn't have been notified by a 911 call, they could have hit that, and instantly it would have recorded what was going on. That panic button is not just for police interactions. If you feel like you're being abducted, or if you feel like you're in a situation where there's a mass shooting, we want people to be safe, and we want to get you help. And if we have to call 911 in your area because that's going on, we'll have someone who will call, because we're monitoring it 24 hours a day. I talked about the live feeds. I talked about the share recordings. And that's pretty much the app in a nutshell. Oh, and not to mention, you get a podcast twice a week that will have you understanding what's going on in the state. We're going to bring on good cops. We're going to bring on victims of police violence. We're going to bring on politicians to talk about changing laws when there is a situation where there's a shooting, and we got activists and community members who say, hey, we've been working on this. We've been telling them this is a problem. Let's bring people on. But we want to have it visual, so it won't just be audio. You'll be able to see my face. Iman's face will be my co-host on the podcast, and then you'll be able to see those politicians, those activists, or those family members. You'll be able to see their face, too, and we can talk about these things because it's a thread around this country. We're all connected. It doesn't matter if the police are doing something to somebody white in Idaho in a trailer park. It does not matter. That person deserves their right to due process also. So that's the app in a nutshell. And what I'm trying to do in 5 years, Sister Rashi, if I could put an outlook on it, I want to reduce the amount of police shootings. If it's 1,111 at the end of this year, I want that in 5 years to be at least 200. And then 5 years after that, let's get it down to around 50 around the country. We can get better officers in play, and then we also can teach citizens how to interact with officers as well. And if someone is having a mental health crisis, let's get them help versus getting them in a situation with law enforcement. That's what I'm hoping to do with this app: change policing, save lives, and then also build a database around the country where we can track those officers so that we can say, hey, we see you just as much as you see us, and we as the people who you work for, your true bosses, when it's time to cancel your Christmas, we're going to cancel it.
He said socks and books this year, buddy. Well, look, I wanted to share this with you. I wanted to share this with you real quick, because what you're talking about is not a new subject. To what you were speaking to earlier, Brother Rodney, how the cost? Because you know, as the old people used to say, you know, if it don't make dollar, it don't make sense. You know, son, and if it's costing, then you got to figure out a way to make that make to not do that. So you say pressure from us? Yes, we're not the only one pressuring the police to do something. The insurers themselves, the companies that broker the exchange between the collection of money from the institution and the people that get paid out to, they say they tired of it. And they said that they are tired of you having that type of insurance. Eventually, they're trying to phase it out. So that can 100% be one of the motivating causes for us to adopt 12 watts as a national standard. You know, what are we looking at? We looking at trends in this, we looking at trends in that. Well, let's look also at not just trends in weather, not just trends in fashion or whatever, or food, some new food they done came up with, but trends in how we are interacting socially. But I can imagine that this database is going to explode. And I really do hope that you are not thinking so small that you don't see the sheer amount of data that you're going to be responsible for. And when you talk that kind of data, that data, Brother Barry, it is going to be used for newspaper, television, junkets and snippets. You know how they say studies show, you know, when they say them words in the news, studies show, blah, blah, blah. They'll be talking about information gathered from that data that you'll be collecting. And I just wonder mm-hmm. if you have, you know, kind of put that in your mind, internalized the sheer amount of mm-hmm. data that you're going to be dealing with.
So I have internalized it. I thought about it from the aspect of what it would be and how would that be for us. And one thing, and I'm just one man, and this is just one company, and we're looking to partner with community partners around the country. That's why I'm talking to the NAACP here locally. I'm talking to Man in Vegas, and I'll be looking to talk to everyone around the country to say, hey, collectively, this is ours. This belongs to the people, just like the police does. It's a corporation, but ultimately that information belongs to the people because the people collect the data. My main goal is to protect the data because we don't want them to corrupt the data. I don't want no one to say, hey, it's a child. You know, it's a kid being held in a building, and then they come in and they break up the servers or bust up the servers, and now we don't have the data and the app or the website is down. So what we've done is we strategically placing those servers out of the country. Why? So that we can make sure that the data is always the data, it's live. Those community partners, they get monthly reports, they get quarterly reports, and they'll get an annual report. And during that annual report, we're going to bring them all together. And we want to do, and this comes from the company. This is not on their dime, this is on our dime. We're going to bring those folks together and talk about what's going on in the country. And once again, it's our role as citizens to move things further. We can't have civil rights organizations that are not sitting at the table directing the civil rights for our community. That's why we have them as the leadership. We have to activate and say, no, we got to make this happen. And we as a corporation, if I got to put money into the National Action Network inside of Vegas to make sure that little boys that are in high school are protected and they're not being harassed by the police, I don't mind as a corporation to put that money back to say, hey, what do we got to do to make sure that this doesn't happen again? And I'm saying this around the country. This is what corporations do anyway. They've already done that. But it's on us to believe. It's a lot of data, for sure. But how much do we as a collective, how much do we really care about our safety, Sister Rashi? Because I feel like more importantly is the data is one thing, but us doing something for us without them forcing us to do it, that's what I'm amazed by. That's what I want. Because when we start moving in that way, then that lets me know that there is a true awareness. Like, we don't want to see another, we should never want to see another George Floyd, right? But if we do have to see another George Floyd.
And they shouldn't either, for real, right? They shouldn't even, because it was a lot of work getting us back from acting up like that. You know what I'm saying?
No, that's right. And if we do end up seeing another George Floyd, how can we make sure that not only justice is swift, but that we change the landscape of policing? Because in my state, like I said again, not my state, but my city of Minneapolis, what ended up happening was they quelled for a little bit, they got quiet, but then we hired Officer Timberlake, and we're hiring other officers who have bad pasts similar to a Timberlake or a Shock. So that tells you the culture of the policing hasn't changed. They just waited for people to turn their eye so they can go back to do what they want to do.
So I'd like to ask, and Brother Barry, can you tell folks once again how they can gain access to the app?
Yes, if you go to www.12watch.com, you can sign up for early subscription. If you sign up for annual early subscription, you can be like my brother Rodney Smith, who's entered into a raffle to win a trip for a family of four to the Bahamas, right? That's all inclusive. 4 days, 3 nights, airfare, as well as hotel stay, right? And we're going to announce who wins that on Juneteenth when the app is launched. If you want to do month-to-month, that's fine. You also can enter into a raffle to win T-shirts, hoodies, cups, and then also a trip to Las Vegas. Y'all might bump into Brother Rodney while he's at the Peppermill or what have you. So I'm just saying, we got things to entice you to get in. If you take the annual, it's $47.88 for one person, which breaks down to $3.99, so pretty much $4 a month. If you do monthly, it's $4.99, which comes out to $59.88 a month. You could also do annual for a family of four, which is $119.88, or you can do month-to-month, which is $10.99. Now, the one thing I want you guys to hear with those prices compared to the other apps that are similar to ours, our app is much cheaper. We offer you the therapist as well as the lawyer, not just the lawyer alone. We also offer this real-time data. And more importantly, what we offer you is we offer you a way to change it. We don't want to just tell you that Black Lives Matter. We want to show you that we matter. And this is not a dig at Black Lives Matter by any stretch of the means. And I'm willing to work with them, too, if they're out there. Give me a call. Let's do some work. I'm working with anyone that wants to come to the table and really change things. But what I'm saying is instead of us just saying things, we can actually begin to show it. And if there's local governments out there, cities that want to team up, state agencies that want to team up, let's talk because we're all in this together. However, we want to make sure that due process is given out to everyone. And I don't know about you, Brother Rodney. I'm a fan of the movie Judge Dredd, but I ain't looking for no Judge Dredd out in the streets.
Nah, no Judge okay, Dredd, movie, no Punisher.
Yeah, that movie was deep.
Yeah,
I'm excited about the app. I see potential in how it puts some power in the people's hands in multiple areas. So we can start getting our police to the point of where we can have an officer friendly. Once again, there can be more police officers like that little 5-year-old boy in New York who didn't wait for his mother to come pick him up when she was running. Just, I think she was only like 5 minutes late. I guess I was a little impatient, but we do need to do that. And we also need to do it not just for the citizens, but we also need to do that for the good police officers who are maligned because of all the bad officers. And I can tell you, when I talk to some of the police officers that I know, some brothers, and I ask them point blank, why aren't more of the good police officers speaking up, since we always are told that it's just a few bad apples? And he got real with me, and he says, well, Rodney, first of all, this is also my job. And this is my livelihood. And yeah, I'm here to protect and serve, but there is that thin blue line that's mostly white people. And if you cross it, you don't know if they're going to show up timely on a call when you need them. You don't know if one of them stray bullets is one of theirs. He said, did you know that most black police officers who are shot are actually shot by fellow white police officers? So he says, and when we do come forward, not only don't we normally get support from the community, because we definitely don't get support from our leadership. And he says, that may sound a little cowardly, but he said, that's just the reality. And if we could get more support from the citizens, more would probably come forward. And I believe the brother. I took it to heart. He was real with me. And so this app gives us an opportunity to be proactive. It gives us an opportunity that when we know we're in the proximity of a bad actor, a bad cop, to be on alert. When we do have an interaction with law enforcement, we can record this, and you can have it preset to blast to family members, so they can see what's going on. Potentially at some point, when there are lawyers involved, maybe some law firms or some of the nonprofit law firms can join the app, and so they can see when a citizen in real time is being abused. One of the other things I said was, suppose when a person is being abused, it got blasted to everybody immediately. There's an alert. And that gave us the opportunity to come down en masse, not to fight, not to shoot, to ensure that the police officer is doing his or her job properly. And if not, the voice of the people maybe can help, because maybe all of them can get on the phone right then and call their city council person in that district. Hey, police officers are abusing Jim Bob. Well, I guess for us it would be Leroy. Come on.
Right.
We need some support. Pull up 12 watts so you can see for yourself. That puts pressure on the sheriff's department here or your whatever your local police force is. So there's just so many ways that this app can be used to benefit good policing, because we need good police, to also save money, because bad policing costs us money. But the biggest cost is when it injures or causes the demise of a citizen unnecessarily. You can never get them back. So, Brother Barry, I want you to, before we close out, I want you to tell them again how folks can get a hold of that app.
So I want you to go to www.12watch.com. You don't have to register for a full year. I'm telling people, if all you have is $4.99, go register for a month. Go sign up, get in a raffle, get a chance to win something, and also get this free month starting on Juneteenth. Let's do something that I feel like will make our mark for a generation. Let's create something, as Sister Rashi said about the database, that this is different. This is us being able to say collectively we came together, we came up with a solution, and we ain't begging nobody to do it. We are just going to get it done. And after we get it done, we're going to all use it, and we're going to be able to use it. And it's just another effective tool. We want to make sure that if they're going to be in the business of killing black folks, we got to put them out of business. And this is the way to do it. If they're going to be in the business of making sure citizens across the spectrum don't get due process, this is the way to do it. This is not a way for just black folks. Native Americans, come on in. White folks, come on in. Asians, come on in. Oh, you just got here a couple of years ago? Come on in. East Africa, West Africa, South America, come on in. This is for everyone. And this app is no different to me than someone using Google Maps or using Waze. This is an app for everyone. Everyone will find something that they would like with this app. If you have children that are starting to drive and you worry about them, teenagers, or you got just teenage boys and girls who may go to the varsity games, basketball, football, this is a good way for them to be able to also let you know that they're good. If there is interaction with law enforcement, they'll be able to record it. And we have other features that allow them safety. So, hey, sometimes we have a stealth feature all the time that they can record, and no one would know that they're recording. The screen just goes black. They have to give the prompt to stop the recording, and no matter how much they try to damage the phone, it will still record, and it will still share the GPS location. It's only turned on. The GPS location is only turned on when you activate this app, but no one will be alone. And that's the most important thing for me, y'all. So what we're going to start doing on the 12th of each month, we're supposed to do a mixer this 12th, but we pushed it back because we wanted to start in January when we start giving away prizes. But at this point here, I just want to say to you all, get in the game and let's make it happen.
All right, there it is. Let's get in the game. Let's make it happen. Let's be proactive instead of reactive, and let's empower ourselves. If not just talk about it, let's be about it. And Brother Barry has developed a product that will allow us to do just that. Sister Rossi, what do you think?
I'm sitting here trying to figure out how avant-garde this is, how he could possibly have just sat up and it just pinged. I mean, I just want to, in my mind, because, big things, you don't know. Some dude in a college dorm creates the app for all, for a 20-year app. Some guy who doesn't know you know, about he ain't played in a long time. He develops a super soaker gun that's worth billions. You never know. You never know who you're going to influence with an, you know. So I'm just so excited, Brother Barry. It's definitely like giving birth. I hope you don't feel too, you know, that maternal feeling that you get when you know you are embarking on something that you've never done before. But it's crucial that you do it right. You know what I'm saying? You got my support. You got my subscription. You got my T-shirt money. As soon as I get into the Christmas buying loop, you know, it ain't this tick. For some people, it's that next tick. Well, not Christmas, but the end of year gift celebration time. So I look forward to gifting 12 watch merchandise for those who are ready. You can get you a 12 watch anything, hoodie, hat, I want to say. I saw a lot of merch in there. So for those who are looking for gifts, you know, because it's a pretty tight hoodie. The logo's pretty hot. And so if you're looking to give someone something or at least let someone know, that this app exists. You can wear the sweater. They're almost all of them is going to say, what is that about? You know, what is that shirt about? And then you get to loop them on in to the real deal of empowerment and protection and proactivity. So thank you, Brother Barry. Thank you so much. I can't wait to get my hand.
And the other thing, too, is you'll have the ability to give the app to others. So even if you decided that you wanted to buy a monthly or annual, you can just buy another monthly annual for someone else. All you have to do is just put in, you know, you can pay and then just put in their email address. And then we'll send them the link when it's a few weeks before it's time to launch. And then they'll be able to create their username, create the avatar or the profile picture and all of those things. And bam, they're in there. And so we're keeping that database. When you purchase a subscription, whether it's annual or it's a month-to-month, you do get an email confirming your purchase as well as us welcoming you to become a watchful citizen. And that's what we're calling our collective. We are a group of watchful citizens watching each other's backs, watching 12, and then we're going to change as we watch. We'll create the narrative, and we'll be the change that we want to be. And once again, this is not an anti-anything app. This is just pro-due process. We want due process for all, and we want law enforcement to treat people with dignity and respect, and we want people to treat them with dignity and respect. Hey, I've been speeding. I've had to take my ticket. I may not have been the most polite, meaning I'm not a talkative person when it comes to that, but I'm certainly going to respect that officer, and I want to make sure he or she gets home and that, you know, we both get to live to see another day. And that's all I got. So who's out there? Who's out there that wants to join the watch? That's it. Join the watch today. www.12watch, spelled out TWELVEWATCHAPP.com. Join the watch today. Don't wait for tomorrow. Let's get into the game right away.
All right. Well, thank you, Brother Barry, for that. Thank you, everybody.
I want you to close us
out all the way. But I do want to say something to people. Go get the app. Give to somebody else. Get a family plan. And, oh, yes, December 7th just passed. Do you all know what happened on December 7th? If you don't know, look it up.
Well, that's it. That's it for this week. Hey,